In the matter of City of Asbury Park versus Star Insurance Company, can we please have appearances of counsel?
Denise DiPiccari from the firm of Weber Gallagher on behalf of the appellant, City of Asbury Park.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thomas Hastings from the Dilworth Paxson firm on behalf of the defendant respondent, Star Insurance Company.
Good morning, counsel. Thank you for joining us in this way. Ms. DiPiccari, please go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors. The certified question before the court, as you're aware, is does the made whole doctrine apply to an insured's first dollar risk, that being a self-insured retention or a deductible? And it's the city's position that this question should be answered in the affirmative based on existing New Jersey precedent. Turning first to the case of Providence Washington Insurance Company versus Hodges, 67 NJ Super 460. This was an appellate division decision made back in 1961. There, we believe the court specifically endorsed the made whole doctrine in the context of insurance deductibles. There, the court held that absent express terms in the contract to the contrary, the made whole doctrine necessarily applies. And in adhering to the doctrine, the Hodges Court required the reimbursement in that case of a $50 insurance deductible prior to the insurer being able to access monies by way of subrogation. And in coming to this conclusion, the court looked at the specific policy language, in particular the subrogation provision in that policy language, and found that that provision did not contain express language specific to priority of recovery between the insured and the insurer. Significantly, the language in the Hodges subrogation provision is identical to that in the Star subrogation provision, in that it too does not address priority of recovery. We note that the Third Circuit advised in its petition to the court that the Supreme Court of New Jersey appears to have implicitly endorsed Hodges' suggestion that the deductibles may be recovered under the made whole doctrine, and it cites to the case of Culver versus Insurance Company of North America, 115 NJ 451, a decision from 1989. There, the Culver court found, noted that the court in Hodges allowed the insured to be paid its $50 deductible from the third-party award before the insurer was able to obtain reimbursement for its insurance payment. Culver also cited favorably to Hodges in noting that the made whole doctrine could only be abrogated by specific express contractual provisions. The city submits that the Third Circuit set forth the correct interpretation of both Culver and Hodges, in that if the courts of Jersey had wanted to make a carve out from the made whole doctrine for self-insured retentions or deductibles, it had the opportunity to do so and chose not to. Instead, it looked to the specific language set forth in the relevant subrogation provision in the policy. And again, if you look to the language of the subrogation provision in the Star policy, it's clear that it does not address priority of recovery and is in fact silent on this issue. If you look to the case of Travelers Property Casualty Insurance Company versus National Union from 621 F3D 697, an Eighth Circuit decision from 2011, and a case cited originally by Star in their moving papers, you can see an example of subrogation language that does specifically address priority of recovery. In Travelers, the provision provided, the traveler shall be entitled to priority of recovery against any such third party, including interest, to the extent payment has been made to the insured. Here, Star could have easily inserted similar language into its subrogation provision, and it did not. Accordingly, the language of the policy does not abrogate the made whole doctrine. We believe that the out-of-state case law cited by the city fully supports a finding that the made whole doctrine applies to both self-insured retentions and deductibles. Looking briefly first to the case of Bordeaux versus American Safety Insurance Company, a case out of the Washington Court of Appeals from 2008, there it was held that the insureds were in fact entitled to recover $100,000 self-insured retention prior to the insurer being reimbursed from third-party proceeds. And the court based its decision on two things. One, looking to the specific language of the subrogation provision and finding that it did not expressly address priority of recovery. And it also rejected an argument that was initially advanced by Star, that the SIR somehow functions as a primary layer of insurance coverage. And that point's important, which I'll get to. Similarly, the Intervest Construction case versus General Fidelity Insurance Company out of the Supreme Court decision in Florida 2014. There, the Florida Supreme Court looked to the language of, again, the subrogation provision to determine whether or not it abrogated the made whole doctrine. And consistent with Hodges, the Florida Supreme Court held that absent express terms to the contrary, the insurer is entitled to be made whole before the insurer may recover any portion of the third party proceeds. And significantly, that court too found that the SIR did not function as a primary layer of insurance. We believe that Bordeaux and Intervest are consistent with New Jersey law, not only with respect to looking to the specific language of the subrogation provision, but also in their rejection of the proposition that an SIR or deductible constitutes a primary layer of coverage. New Jersey courts have similarly rejected that concept as identified by the Third Circuit in their petition, citing to the cases of Scott versus Salerno, 297 NJ Super 437, an appellate division decision from 1997. That policy had $150,000 retention, and the court held that that retention did not qualify as insurance for purposes of the application of another insurance provision in the policy. That case was cited favorably in Moore versus Nair, 321 NJ Super 419, an appellate division decision from 1999. Which similarly held that a deductible or SAR does not constitute other insurance. And we believe this issue is significant because to honor the self-insured retention in the manner that's suggested by Starr would require, we believe, a characterization of the SIR as a primary layer of insurance, because this is essentially the rationale underlying the Fireman's Fund decision, the Connecticut Supreme Court case from 2013, which the lower court and Starr primarily rely upon. If you look to the Fireman's Fund case, there it was found that the policy deductible was in fact akin to a primary layer of self-insurance, and they found that this primary excess relationship existed, and therefore the excess carrier was entitled to reimbursement prior to the primary layer carrier. This rationale has been specifically addressed and rejected by the courts of New Jersey, and so we find that Fireman's Fund simply is inapplicable because of that. I mentioned that Starr encourages the court to look to the language of the self-insured retention provision as being the actual language that abrogates the made whole doctrine. We believe that enforcement of the SAR provision is not what's at issue here. The SAR provision is not where Starr or the insurance carrier would obtain its right to subrogation. There's a reason all of the courts, Florida, New Jersey, Washington, look to the language of the subrogation provision to determine whether or not they've contracted around the made whole doctrine, because that's where the insurer secures its right to obtain these third party proceeds. It's a right that is exclusive to the insured, and it can only get the benefit of that right by looking to the subrogation language. So it's the state's position, the city's position, that in advancing the argument that Starr is actually asking the court to rewrite the policy in their favor, to include language that simply isn't there, language similar to the traveler's endorsement that specifically addresses priority of recovery. And as we know,
let's start with a simple proposition that your client agreed to cover the first $400,000. Are you in effect asking to rewrite that part of the agreement?
No, I'm not. I don't believe that the SIR endorsement addresses recovery of third-party proceeds. The SIR simply meant it's a retention of risk by the city. They agreed to pay any claims or that came in within that $400,000 self-insured retention. It has an absolute right. Let's say that the claim in this case was only $350,000. The city has an absolute right under both the workers' compensation statute and by the existence of the SIR to go after the actual third-party tortfeasor. The city wasn't the responsible entity or the negligent entity here. They were able to recover that money from the third-party tortfeasor, and that money should go to them to reimburse them for the SIR. The only thing that can change that right or alter that right, we believe, is the subrogation language, a language that would give Starr the right to also pursue or recover that money.
Why not the original language of their agreement? Under their agreement, the city has assumed the risk of the first $400,000, correct? And Starr has assumed the risk of everything after that. So the city paid the first $400,000. And then Starr paid what the remainder, $2.6 million. And then there was a third party recovery of approximately, what, $935,000 or $936,000.
That was set aside for the workers' compensation lien, yes.
Precisely. Now, there's no way that Starr can get fully recovered. And you're asking, and under the original agreement, the city said, I'll pay the first $400,000. Now you want Starr to pay what? Part of your $400,000, even though they can't even get anywhere near a full recovery themselves for the money that they put out?
I believe that that's where we're kind of conflating two things. Recovering money that they put out versus paying money to Starr. And if you look repeatedly in council, in Starr's brief, they talk about getting insurance benefits that it didn't pay for. That's not what's happening here.
But in the interest of fair, I'm sorry, go ahead, Council. Go ahead, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Starr has that independent right to recover its out-of-pocket costs irrespective of the insurance policy. It has this SAR, it's responsible for $400,000. It has a right under the made whole doctrine to be made whole for, it has the right to pursue recovery for that amount of money. And the only thing that would give Starr the right to obtain that, and the only way it gets to that is through the subrogation language.
But in the interest of fairness, counsel, your client, in order to obtain the SIR, received a benefit and lower premiums, correct?
Well, I don't think it did. Both parties here received a benefit.
The fact that they both did doesn't mean that your client didn't get a benefit. Your client received a benefit in the sense that they had defense paid by the carrier, not by yourselves, that you received a reduced premium for the SIR. So in the interest of fairness, since it seems like the carrier was bearing most of their burden, shouldn't they be entitled to recover fully before, or at least comparative to what your client put out?
Well, I don't think there were defense costs here. This was a workers' comp claim that was paid out
They had attorneys, didn't they?
I'm not sure.
I doubt they worked for free.
I'm not certain of, Your Honor. But regardless, we believe there really isn't a windfall here because there's benefits on both sides by paying lower premium because Starr is retaining. It's not a shifting of risk. It's a retention of risk. And by retaining that risk, it's giving a benefit to the insurance company for not having to adjust or pay out on minor claims. Those are costs and benefits to the insurance carrier. And again,
Counsel, I'd like to talk about a little bit about your theory that the subrogation language is the only language we should look at, and that if the subrogation language does not support the position of Starr, we should therefore say the position of Starr is not supported by other language. By its very nature, the subrogation provision in this appropriately tethers the subrogation right, which is statutory as well, to payments made by the insurance company for the workers' compensation loss. Correct? It says, in the event of any payment under this insurance contract, the insurer shall be subrogated to all of the insured's rights of recovery, etc. So the subrogation clause ties it into what was paid out by Starr, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So if you have the obligation to pay that first, your client has the obligation to pay that first $450,000, and Starr is seeking subrogation in terms of the comp obligation, why doesn't that bring in that SIR into the subrogation clause?
Well, for one, if you look to courts that have addressed the issue, the specifically SIR provisions in both Bordeaux and Intervest, those cases dealt with self-insured retentions. And respectfully, the court, that they did not look to the SIR language. I'm sure it contained very similar language. All SIR provisions are essentially
the New Jersey law so far is about a deductible. Are you saying that a deductible and an SIR are the same?
I've been doing insurance.
I don't think you're saying that because
I would never.
In your wider practice, that may cause all kinds of problems. So I'm not going to even ask you. You're not contending that.
No. They are fundamentally different. I think kind of in this circumstance, and I've been wrestling with it a little in my head, that the SI, that it's kind of a distinction without a difference for purposes of this.
Okay. But a deductible is a very, a $50 deductible that was in
1961.
I hate to admit it, but I was around for that. But that was a $50 deductible, and this $450,000 SIR are two analytically different types of obligations on the part of the insurer, correct?
True, but they both fundamentally speak to the underlying issue as to whether or not the made-whole doctrine applies to a first, you know, whether or not a first dollar risk is subsumed within the made-whole doctrine. And that, I think, is regardless of whether something is $50, $150,000, like the Bordeaux case, I think, was $100,000 SIR.
I'm not saying just pure amount. I'm saying that these are two different things. This is not we're not talking about a deductible, are we?
No, deductibles, there's a different responsibility between an insured retains, has to do everything, to put it very simply, with respect to an SIR until that SIR is exhausted. No obligation stand on the part of the insurance company. With a deductible, they're obligated from dollar one.
The insurance company has to analyze the claims in a deductible, right?
Correct, which is
individually.
Why I think the SIR is even more favorable to my arguments, because there is no real windfall. The SIR, the insured is retaining risk. It's doing everything itself to obtain that lower premium.
If your client had gone out there and said to Star, and I don't know what kind of insurance Star offers or doesn't offer, we want you to have all the risk. We're not going to have an SIR. Is it fair to assume you would have paid a lot more the client would have paid a lot more for its premiums?
Well, it would have paid more, but not because of this issue. It would have paid more.
No, I'm just saying it would have paid more. It would have bargained for a different level of risk, correct?
It would have. And truthfully, that's based on other factors. It's based on the fact that, well, now they would be assuming first dollar risk, and the insurance company would have to pay out and adjust those minor claims that it doesn't have to do with the existing self-insured retention. If you look to the actual underwriting here, I flip it and think, if they had put this language in their subrogation provision, would the premium have changed? If they had looked into whether or not New Jersey was a made whole doctrine state, and hey, you know what, maybe we should throw this language into our provision so that we have it there.
So the made whole doctrine is a doctrine of equity, correct?
Correct.
So I'm trying to see how this doctrine of equity works here. We know that the SIR is $400,000, and we know that Star paid $2.6 million above that retention, right?
Correct.
And we know that the third party claim is only going to allocate like $936,000.
Correct.
I'm trying to understand how equity allows the city to get back its first $400,000 that it agreed that it would pay out first, while the insurance company, which paid out $2.6 million, doesn't get back its at least $936,000 to offset the $2.6 million it paid out. How is it equitable that the SIR gets paid off when the insurance company is only being made a fraction whole if it gets the full 936? Go ahead.
Well, I think in this case, looking at the numbers that existed in this case, I understand your point, but that's not necessarily, you know, always the circumstance. You're not going to be dealing with such extreme numbers, and you're not going to be dealing with only recovering, say, you know, a quarter or a third or whatever it is here of what the actual workers' compensation liens were. And I wasn't involved in how or why it was compromised to the number that it was compromised too. I mean, there very well could have been opportunity for the parties to get more had they not compromised the lien. But again, I was not involved in that part of the litigation, and I really don't know how those negotiations went down. But I will say, at no point in time did Star take the position that, I mean, there were two liens in place here. There was the city's lien, as it's entitled to, and there was Star's lien. Both of them were asserting their respective liens that they were entitled to assert to these proceeds. You know, looking to equity, it's the made whole doctrine. Yes, it's an equitable remedy that New Jersey applies. It says that it states unequivocally that the insured is entitled to be made whole for its out-of-pocket losses before the insurance carrier is. That's the way the doctrine is applied in New Jersey.
The way it's typically applied, tell me if I'm mistaken, and the way it's typically operated is you have a plaintiff who's injured, let's say negligently. He gets insurance coverage, or she gets insurance coverage of $250,000, then sues the third-party tortfeasor and gets an amount of money because the damages are well over $250,000. And the made whole doctrine is the insured under those circumstances is entitled to be made whole for the entirety of his or her damages before the insurance company gets recompensed for the first $250,000 of put out. I mean, that's the typical application of the made whole doctrine. Am I correct?
That's one circumstance where the exposure was above the policy. Yes, but truthfully, I mean, in both instances, the insured is out of pocket. It's out of pocket monies, and as a result of an accident that isn't their fault. And that's why they're able to recover third party proceeds. It's not insurance benefits. It's not insurance that they're getting more insurance money from Star. They're getting it from the actual third party tortfeasor, and they're entitled to that.
But the difference between the example I gave you and this case is in this case, the city contracted with Star to assume the first $400,000. That's at least one and the primary difference between the typical made whole doctrine and this case. Am I correct?
That is, yes. It's instead of being on the back end, it was on the front end that they sustained the loss.
And in light of that, tell us why it wouldn't and shouldn't be considered a windfall for your client to get the recovery for $400,000 that it chose not to insure.
Well, again, because of when, in looking at the windfall argument, you know, Star argues that they're getting fruits of insurance it paid for and insurance that it did not pay for. That's their specific argument regarding a windfall. And respectfully, that's not what's happening here. As I stated, they're not getting double insurance payments from Star. They're getting money that they're entitled to get. They have a right to pursue recovery. They didn't give up that right. They have a right to pursue recovery from the third-party tortfeasor and obtain that money. And the only way that right is abrogated, that they're not entitled to that money, is by looking to the subrogation language. And if the language specifically says, hey, guess what? We get priority over you for that money, like the language in the traveler's provision, then yes, they've contracted around the made whole doctrine. And then absolutely... that money should go to Star based on the contractual language.
Is there any authority for the notion that the priority must be set forth in the subrogation clause? Must be set out. In other words, do you disregard all the other language of the contract?
I believe Hodges says that. Hodges looked.
Hodges was not a subrogate.
It looked to the language was not of the subrogation provision.
Well, it says you look to a subrogation clause, but Hodges was not a subrogation case. There was no recovery in Hodges. That was purely equity because the insurance company prejudiced the insured. Here, well, everybody was involved in the workers' comp claim. Everybody's involved in the subrogation claim. And the limits of liability for Star specifically say the company's this is right in the contract. Limit of liability shall apply solely in excess of the named insured's self-insurance. And in this case, there's roughly almost $1.7 million paid out under the workers' comp policy that apparently the self-insured retention you're saying doesn't apply to, even though that clause in the insurance contract specifically says it does. How do you get around that?
Well, I think that the SIR and the right of subrogation are two very different things. And the SIR, again, deals with the insured retaining risk. And in retaining risk, it doesn't give up its right to pursue third-party recovery. It doesn't.
It doesn't say that. But it does say that STAR has a limit, an exposure, limited to everything after $400,000. And in this case, unlike any other case, as far as I can tell, that you've cited, there is one point after the subrogation, after that money is being collected in settlement that everybody was part of, $1.67 million will have been paid out by somebody. And you're saying all of it gets paid out by STAR, even though the company's limit of liability shall apply solely in excess of the name insured, self-insured retention.
It sounds like it's everything over $400,000. They paid their money in excess of the self-insured retention. That's one aspect of the coverage. But now we're talking about something different. We're talking about recovery from a third-party tortfeasor. And we're not talking about when and how the insurance company pays out on the policy. It did it. It paid out in excess of the $400,000 SIR. But now we're talking about a completely different thing. We're talking about the city's independent right to recover its out-of-pocket expenses from the tortfeasor. It does not give up that right by agreeing to an SIR. I don't think there's any authority for that.
Doesn't the carrier also have that right, counsel? Doesn't the carrier also have STAR have an independent right to recover it?
Under the workers' compensation lien? Right, the subrogation provision. That's where it gets the right.
It has an independent right to recover it under the workers' compensation statute. Section 40.
If you look to the workers' compensation statute, Section 40 actually specifically says that both the employer and the insurer have that right. However,
but your argument writes out the insurer from that, because you're saying only the insured has a right. You're writing that section about they both have the right out.
If we're looking at the workers' compensation statute, the employer, and the insurer both have that right. However, unlike the Jones decision, the Pennsylvania case, that talked about a statutory scheme of reimbursement where there was, when it came to third-party proceeds, the insured was entitled to 90% of third-party proceeds and the insurer was entitled to 10%. The workers' compensation statute does not look to or discuss priority of recovery at all. And significantly, if you look
at Section 70... Does that mean it should be equal? Does that mean that they both should be equal?
No, actually...
Depending on the amount of risk, like your client's risk was only $400,000. The insurance carriers was $2.6 million, so if you compare those on a pro rata basis, they should be entitled to recover more. Doesn't that what the statute suggests to you?
It didn't. I mean, I'm not saying that necessarily would be a bad result, but the statute doesn't specifically address it like the Pennsylvania statute did. There it was 90-10 in favor of the insured. But here, the workers' compensation statute doesn't address it. And if I could... Your Honors, very briefly, if you look at Section 77 of the Workers' Compensation Statute that discusses the situation here, technically STAR is not considered an insurer under the Workers' Compensation Statute because it's an excess carrier. If you look there, it says that any employer may, for its own protection, insure its liability for payment of any stated loss in excess of $100,000, here it was $400,000, provided that any such contract of insurance shall operate only between the employer and its insurance carrier and shall not be subject to any of the provisions of this chapter.
How are they an excess carrier? Asbury Park is not an insurance company.
No.
How are they? There's nothing about the contract between Asbury Park and Star that relates to excess insurance, where an insurance carrier provides primary, the excess carrier provides secondary. There's a whole separate actuarial calculation, a whole separate premium calculation.
Oh,
there's nothing about this case that involves excess. There's a difference between self-insured retention and primary insurance furnished by an insurance carrier.
I agree.
So that section has nothing to do with this case.
Well, it's
only Section 40.
Respectfully, Star does cite to the self-insurer provision in its policy, saying that the city is to function as a self-insurer under the Workers' Comp Act. And if you look at that section,
I appreciate the intricacies of this argument. I think we're getting a little far afield from the certified question that we have in front of us. So let me just ask my colleagues, are there other questions that relate to the certified question? Is there anything, Ms. Deepakari, you'd like to end your argument with?
No, I'm fine, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hastings.
Thank you, Your Honors. Under equitable principles, the made-whole doctrine should not apply to first-dollar risk that is allocated to an insured by means of a self-insured retention or deductible. In this case, the STAR policy unambiguously requires the city to retain, for its own account, the first $400,000 of any workers' compensation loss, and for STAR's coverage to apply only in excess of the city's retention. Nothing in the policy says that the self-insured retention will not apply when there is a third-party recovery, or that the city will only pay the first $400,000 of a workers' compensation loss if there is no third-party recovery. The city, disregarding the clear language of the policy, says its self-insured retention should be repaid because of the made-whole doctrine. But an insured cannot logically or equitably seek to be made whole vis-a-vis an insurer when the insured has agreed with the insurer, in return for a lower premium, that the insured would retain the first portion of a loss. Pity did not pay for first-dollar workers' compensation coverage, but that is what it is trying to end up with here. If the city prevails, the parties will be left with an unreimbursed workers' compensation loss of approximately $2.1 million, and excess insurer STAR will be paying all of it, notwithstanding the city's unambiguous $400,000 retention. Applying the made-whole doctrine to self-insured retentions or deductibles would be inconsistent with the equitable principle underlying the made-whole doctrine, which is that the burden of a loss should rest on the party paid to assume the risk. Here, the city is trying to burden STAR with the risk of the first $400,000 of this workers' compensation loss, or STAR was not paid to assume. The made-whole doctrine should come into play only when an insurance exceeds the upper limit of its insurance. It should not be a means of circumventing a bargain for deductible or retention. The city has not offered any way to reconcile the language of the policy, which includes the city's self-insured retention, with the result it seeks here. The city would at this stage pay nothing toward this workers' compensation loss, even though it agreed to pay the first $400,000. It has not offered any justification, equitable or otherwise, for disregarding the party's agreement on how any workers' compensation loss would be allocated between them. It cites no authority that would justify disregarding parts of a contract. It does not address why, a matter of best equity, an insured in the city's position should recover before its insurer. He agreed to bear responsibility for the first $400,000 of any workers' compensation loss in return for a lower premium. It bought less risk transfer. The outcome it seeks would transfer the entire risk to its insurer. Having agreed to pay the first $400,000 of the loss, it would end up paying nothing. Equity should have no interest in conferring windfalls, which is what the city would get if it were to prevail in this case. It would get first-dollar coverage for the price of an excess policy. STAR respectfully requests that the court confirm that unambiguous contractual provisions
like the self-insured retention in the STAR policy, will be enforced and answer the Third Circuit's certified question in the negative. And with that, I would welcome questions from the court.
This problem only arises. I'm sorry, Chief. I did it again.
No, you go
this,
ahead.
This problem only arises because there was a subrogation claim, a third-party claim against the responsible tortfeasor, correct? That's the only reason it exists.
Yes, sir. Yes.
And that's the only time this problem is ever going to exist, so that the city is not getting first dollar coverage in any workers' compensation claim unless there's a subrogation claim, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. This problem as is when there's a third-party recovery.
So why is your adversary not correct that STAR could have, should have, would have, like every other case involving this situation, put it in the priority of recovery in the subrogation clause? Why should they not have done that? How are they excused from that?
I think what is important to bear in mind is that I think the made whole doctrine can only come into play with respect a risk that is insured against. If there's no risk transfer, there's no occasion to consider the priority of recovery. With respect to the workers' comp insurance in the STAR policy, that has no limit. There's no prospect that there would be that the city would bear a responsibility for a workers' compensation loss in excess of the limits of the STAR policy, yeah, because there is no upper limit. All that you have here is you're left with the self-insured retention, which was not for $400,000. That risk was never transferred, so there was really no occasion to address in the subrogation provision what the priority of recovery would be in the event of a subrogation recovery, because there was no prospect of an excess loss.
Well, was I mispronounced the name possibly, HOGGES, was that case correctly decided? It applied to a deductible, and if your answer is that it was correctly decided, what's the distinction for purposes of the certified question between a deductible and an SIR?
Your Honor, Hoggs, I submit.
Hoggs, I don't know if that's.
That's the way I've been saying it. I'd be happy to defer to my learned adversary on Hoggs.
I totally guessed on that.
As we all do so often. Okay.
This is addressed in our brief as well, but. The appellate division's comments in Hoggs about the made whole doctrine are entirely dicta. As I believe Justice Solomon pointed out earlier, there was no third party recovery in Hoggs. There was no subrogation action. There was no third party recovery. The issue was whether the insured had to repay the insurer for what the insurer had paid, because the insured had, on its own, without notifying the insurer, pursued a third-party recovery, which was unsuccessful. That there was an adjudication that the third party had no liability, and the court ruled in favor of the insured there.
Let's assume. It's whether it's dicta or it's not dicta, is the statement regarding the deductibles a correct statement of the law? And if it is, or either way, what is the distinction that you would draw between an SIR and a deductible for purposes of the question that we have to answer, the certified question from the Third Circuit?
I for purposes of the question asked by the Third Circuit, I do not believe there is a distinction. They, deductibles and SIRs are distinct, but they are the same in the relevant aspect, which is that they set the point at which, and at the end of the day, an insurer has to pay.
Should I conclude from that that you consider the language, such as whatever it may be, holding or dicta in that case, to be incorrect? The language about deductibles and the first dollar recovery.
Well, one thing we don't know from Hoggs is what the policy said. It's conceivable that it addressed the priority of recovery there by saying that, you know, you'll get your, if there's a third party recovery, you'll get your deductible back, for instance.
But let's say it had a subrogation provision that did not set priorities just as this one does. Let's assume that. Were they wrong? Was the court wrong to suggest that the made whole doctrine would apply in that case had there been a third party recovery?
Yeah, if that's what the court was suggesting, I would submit that it was wrong.
Is the made whole doctrine really such a discreetly formed body of law within New Jersey case law, or is it simply equitable principles that have been applied situationally in the context of a variety of factual settings in which cases have arisen?
I think it is more the latter, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. So if it is, as Justice Albin referred to before, essentially an equitable principle, is the best that we can do in this case talk about the equitable principle, not fully defining a made whole doctrine for all purposes, but discuss the equitable doctrine in the context of an SIR in this contractual setting?
I think
the most that we can do in this case, in this certified question?
I think that's right, certainly on this record.
Mm-hmm. So you started your argument by saying the make whole doctrine is one that does not require anyone to pay more to absorb the risk. The party paid to absorb the risk should be made to bear the burden of that loss and not more. And in answering that application question in this setting, the SIR is outside of the loss that Star has been asked to bear. Is that the simple answer to this question?
I think that's right. The city, you know, did not transfer to Star the risk of a workers' compensation loss up to $400,000.
So the city is asking for a better deal than it purchased from Star.
I think that's absolutely what the city is asking for here. It is asking that in effect for the insurance policy to be rewritten as if it had first dollar coverage anytime there's a third party recovery.
Mm-hmm. I'm pivoting off of one of the observations that Justice Levecki made, that the made whole doctrine may be one situational that the court has addressed. Are you able to articulate in a phrase what the made whole doctrine actually encompasses and what it means? Are you able to articulate that?
I'm not sure that I am, Your Honor. Other than that, it is, as I said, it is a doctrine meant to ensure that that the loss is borne by the party paid to bear that risk.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Hastings? Anything you'd like to add to your argument?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you to